Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with reports today that the United States is adding military forces to the Persian Gulf just as Iran has announced missile tests. The former senior advisor to the special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan in the Obama administration, Vali Nasser, joins us to discuss both Pakistan's opening of supply routes into Afghanistan and the increased deployment of U.S. naval and air forces in the Gulf. Then we'll look into the connection between global warming and record heat spells in the east and wildfires in the west with Michael Oppenheimer, professor of geosciences and international affairs at Princeton University and a longtime participant in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2007. As extreme weather events become more frequent and destructive, we will discuss the growing urgency to deal with the reality of climate change. Then finally, Troy Williams, the executive producer of Radioactive, a progressive talk show on KRCL-FM in Salt Lake City, joins us. He has an article at Salon.com, Romney Boosts Liberal Mormons, and we will discuss the growing divide between the conservative hierarchy of the Church of Latter-day Saints and younger, more liberal Mormons who embrace gay rights and the Mormon moment brought about by the presidential candidacy of Mitt Romney, who they feel is aligned with the conservative past, not the future of the faith. Joining us now is Vali Nasser, who is the dean of the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. He was born in Iran and migrated with his family to the United States following the 1979 Islamic Revolution. His books include The Rise of Islamic Capitalism, Forces of Fortune, The Rise of the New Muslim Middle Class and What It Will Mean for Our World, The Shia Revival and Democracy in Iran. Between 2009 and 2011, he served in the Obama administration as a senior advisor to the special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan. Welcome to Background Briefing, Vali Nasser. Are you there, Vali? I can't hear.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us, Vali. The New York Times, of course, is carrying a lead story in today's New York Times, saying that the United States has quietly moved significant military reinforcements into the Persian Gulf to deter the Iranian military from any possible attempt to shut the Straits of Hormuz and to increase the number of fighter jets capable of striking deep into Iran if the standoff over its nuclear program escalates. So is this some kind of posturing, or I thought the situation vis-a-vis the U.S. and Iran was de-escalating, but now what do we make of this?
Well, this is an old diplomatic tactic that whenever negotiations are stalling or if you want to get even more leverage out of negotiations, you put pressure on the other side, particularly military pressure, and that brings this attention focused on the consequences of the failure of the talks. You know, Nixon used bombing of North Vietnam and Cambodia to get the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong to make concessions at the peace talks. The United States threatened Milosevic with aerial bombing every time there was a impasse in the talks. CNN would show pictures of American B-2 bombers being rolled out of hangars and revving their engines in order to drive the point home to the Serbians to negotiate. So what we're basically seeing is that the U.S. Wants to make sure that the Iranians don't get too comfortable with the current flow of the talks and don't think that the threats that the United States initially made to bring them over into the talks are now off the table.
But I thought in the real world, if you will, where the rubber meets the road as opposed to posturing, that what was really biting on the Iranians is that they have lost, they're losing enormous revenues, they're losing oil customers, their daily output of right. oil has decreased by 1 billion barrels a day, and the oil sanctions haven't really kicked in, they're about to kick in. So in the real world, they're really things are starting to bite. So surely that's having more effect than military maneuvers in the Gulf.
That's absolutely true. That is having a bigger impact. But at the same time, we are also the Obama administration is threatening to escalate economic sanctions even further, and the threat of military force is sort of a multiplier effect in terms of pressure on Iran. But given also the other issue is that given the pressure that economic sanctions is putting on Iran, it's quite possible that the Iranians may lash out. They may decide that the sanctions are essentially economic warfare. They're going for the jugular of the regime, and as they have threatened to, recently, that they could again go after closing the Straits of Hormuz or in some ways try to retaliate. And partly the buildup of military forces in the Persian Gulf region is designed to deter the Iranians from any kind of reaction to the escalation of economic sanctions. So, you know, sanctions are getting to a point that they're becoming enormously painful, as you mentioned. Now you need the military capability also to make sure that the Iranians don't do something that would take economic pressure into actual confrontation.
Well, it's, I guess there's two ways to look at it. It's either extra leverage or may deter them, because the Iranian parliament announced on Monday that it would consider proposed legislation to disrupt traffic in the Straits of Hormuz. And they have said that Iran's military intends to block any oil tankers en route to countries that no longer are buying Iranian crude because of the embargo. Well, that's just about everything else that'd be going through the Gulf. That sounds quite provocative. Is that a realistic threat, do you think?
Well, I think it's not a realistic threat, largely because most of the countries that were buying from Iran are continuing to buy from Iran, except that it's just a reduced amount. The Iranians are also engaged in posturing. I mean, in reality, and this thing is going to be resolved when there is a realistic deal on the table that both sides can live with a little bit of leeway this way or that way. And all of the military threats by both sides or economic sanctions is merely it could merely serve the purpose of getting to a deal, but it will not produce a deal. Doesn't matter how much economic pressure we put on Iran or military threats we put before it, that could merely get the Iranians interested in a deal, but it's not a substitute for a deal. And we've seen in the past that it's quite likely countries like Iraq after the Gulf War that would be willing to accept enormous amount of economic pressure and ruination, in fact, and still refuse to budge. So what the United States has succeeded so far is to use pressure to bring Iran to the table and to get them serious about negotiations. The danger now is to confuse the pressure with an actual deal. In essence, we need to get a deal on the table that then we can leverage the pressure, economic and military, to actually get the Iranians to sign on to it.
Again, I'm speaking with Vali Nasser, who's the dean of the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. And from 2009 to 2011, he served in the Obama administration as senior advisor to the special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan. So given that the sanctions are biting and that sending more military force into that very tense neighborhood with an Iranian regime that I think it's fair to say that it's pretty paranoid, and the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps that pretty much control the regime, they're extremely paranoid. There's questions as to how much the leverage is going to work and how much both sides are posturing. The New York Times in their front page story today are suggesting that this is in part to reassure Israel. And, of course, a lot of senior Obama administration officials in Israel have been saying that reassuring the Israelis that the president has all the options on the table. And when he says that, he means that. So how much is this meant to reassure Israel?
Well, to some extent it does, and some of the reassurance of Israel is really domestic American politics. It's the reassuring of the support base that Israel has in this country, that people who are worried about its security, et cetera, would like the United States to take a more decisive acts in support of Israel. So, you know, part of this argument is also directed domestic American public opinion is designed to fend off any accusations by the Republicans that the United States is putting Israel's security at jeopardy. Ultimately, the key question is that beefing up of forces is only meaningful if the Iranians really believed we would use them. And given generally our decision to be leaving wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and the mood of the American public about wars, I don't think it's a very a convincing threat to say that just when the American public is washing its hands of trillion-dollar wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, that we would be jumping into a new one with Iran. And so I think, you know, I'm not sure how much of this convinces the Iranians about our determination to keep the military option on the table, as it probably assuages the critics of President Obama on the domestic scene that he's actually being very tough with Iran.
Well, you know, there's no mystery. The New York Times revealed that Mitt Romney is extremely close to Netanyahu, and nobody is closer to Netanyahu than Sheldon Adelson, the Las Vegas billionaire who's said he'll pump as much as $100 million in to get Romney elected. So I can't imagine that President Obama has any illusions about what side Israel's prime minister's on, right?
Well, you know, in reality, Iran currently is not really in its entirety a foreign policy issue. It is really a domestic policy issue.
Sure.
Because it's really the only foreign policy issue that the Republicans can potentially criticize President Obama over, and actually the American public would pay attention to and might may potentially decide to vote in the presidential election based on how they assess it. Afghanistan, Iraq, China, Europe, none of those issues evokes the kind of reaction domestically that Iran does. So in many ways, the administration's handling of Iran at one level is based on foreign policy logic of how do you bring somebody to negotiations and get them to make a deal and how do you make this threat go away.
Sure.
At another level is really managing the presidential election.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes, let's turn to the area that you were dealing with as the senior advisor to the special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan in the Obama administration up until last year, Vali Nasser. Obviously, it's connected in the sense that President Obama was unable to apologize to the Pakistanis for the U.S. military strike on a Pakistani border post that killed 24 Pakistani soldiers, I think in part because of election politics and Mitt Romney having framed Obama as the apologizer in chief. Now something has broken that deadlock. I believe that now U.S. and NATO supplies are now going to be allowed to transport through Pakistan into Afghanistan?
Yes. I mean, partly the president was not able to apologize because of the Republican pressure, but because the Pentagon was pressuring him that they should not apologize to Pakistan because Pakistan has been supporting the Taliban in Afghanistan and has been less than cooperative on counterterrorism issues and fighting against extremism. And they favored a policy of intense pressure on Pakistan, of cutting aid, of calling him out for their misbehavior in public. But over the past year, that policy hasn't worked. So the policy of pressure only that was favored by the U.S. military has failed. And the thing that the U.S. military itself cares about, which is access to supply routes into Afghanistan, protecting the drones program, fighting against al-Qaeda, all of those things that the military cared about were put at risk. So in some ways, this provided the president with much more latitude to basically say that, look, your approach hasn't worked, and the approach that was favored actually by the State Department and Secretary Clinton, which is you have to create a positive momentum in the relationship with Pakistan in order to get more cooperation from them than they would like to give, was probably more fruitful. So this opened the door to basically arguing that, you know, the relationship is going to collapse unless we save it. If it collapses, the U.S. military will be the biggest loser in this. And therefore, you have to go back to diplomacy. and find a way, find a language that both sides can live with, that is not a hard apology, it's a soft apology, but enough to give the Pakistanis political cover to be able to open the supply routes.
Well, Vali Nasr, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Good talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Vali Nasr, who's the Dean of the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies, and he wasn't from 2009 to 2011, served in the Obama administration as the senior advisor to the Special Representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the connection between global warming and the fires in the West and the heat spell in the East.